This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly talk show on Brooklands Radio. It's Just Women for the next hour, talking to fabulous, really interesting and inspirational local women about a variety of subjects. I'm Jackie and my co-presenter today is Doreen.
Well, hello, Jackie. Seems ages since we worked together, but what a lovely day for it today. And how lovely to be joined by three smashing guests. We've got life coach Gillian Harvey-Bush, who's written a book about her personal experiences on the survival of cancer. Janet Shell, who is known to all as part of our Brooklands team, about her exhibition at St. Paul's Cathedral in London on the choristers of the Great War. And then Louise Simpson, organiser of the Surrey Vegan Fair and other vegan events. Great guests, I think you'll agree there.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Doreen. And so to start the programme today, I'd like to welcome to the studio Jill Harvey-Bush.
Hello, Jackie. Hi, Doreen.
Hello, Jill.
Hi, Jill. Thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
So anyway, the question really is, what is your journey? What has been your journey from being a life coach to actually starting up your own charity, which is Cancer, A Need for Change?
Well, it was never meant to be in the plan of things to do. It wasn't on one of my goals as a life coach, but it came about because I was surprisingly diagnosed myself with breast cancer. So I had no idea, just went for my routine mammogram, and then I got the recall letter to go down to the Java Centre in Guildford, and from that so started my journey on the route of breast cancer. So I got onto the treadmill, seeing consultants, going all the way through, and as you go through you start to realise there's lots of things there that need further investigation. And obviously because of my skills as a life coach, I was very much engrossed in how the mind can affect what goes on and how powerful it is with in terms of the body. So went through it. Everybody started asking me questions about what did you do and how did you do it and why did you give up this food and why have you done that and why have you done so and so. And so from there I wrote the book Beliefs, Bing and Me, how I tackled the active role I took to tackle cancer. And out of that then came people saying, well, it'd be nice to do some research into these, you know, sort of more natural things. Because there's a fear that when you are diagnosed, the only route is radiotherapy. People seem to believe the two things that they know about is radiotherapy and chemotherapy. And it was really at the end that when I came through it all, my consultant, I had a really good outcome. I managed to downgrade my cancer. I managed to shrink the tumour. And he kind of said, well, how did you do that? But ultimately what happened was my file was basically closed and I suppose put on a shelf somewhere in the NHS with nobody asking and doing further development into, well, what did you do? And
I think that's very surprising, isn't it?
Yes, I think there's a lot of people who do a lot of things and aren't even asked afterwards, well, what have you done and how did you do it? So really that came about, well, what charities are there out there? I mean, obviously there's cancer research and the breast care cancers, etc. So I thought, actually, I'd like to start a charity that maybe looks at the little things that other bigger charities either don't have the funds to do or don't look at.
So basically it's a research charity then. It looks into these other
aspects. Yes, it looks into the other aspects. And obviously because of my background, I've got a degree in psychology. I was very interested in how powerful the mind is and what part does that play in the role of treating cancer and how do people react when they're first diagnosed. So that's really one of the starting areas. And then somebody said, well, you ought to start a charity. I think my poor husband was like, oh, here we go. And that's really where it came from. So the name, Cancer, A Need for Change, obviously a play on the word for change.
Yes.
And a need to really look at maybe other things outside that people aren't looking at in more detail. I think things like turmeric now is becoming well known.
Indeed,
lemons,
yes.
That type of thing.
Yes.
So we're really looking at that research.
And how difficult was it to set up the charity?
It was incredibly difficult. It was a very interesting process. If nothing else, I always think whatever you do, you learn from it. It was going with the Charities Commission, making sure the wording was correct, that we put on our objectives and our aims were absolutely spot on, that we didn't have any sort of ambiguities in it. So we took a long time going backwards and forwards, sorting it out, deciding on which sort of charity you want to be. Are you a incorporated charity? Are you this charity? Are you that charity? Finding trustees. So quite a long process, about 9 months really, from when we first seriously started looking at it to then actually getting our registration, which was at the back end of 2015.
Well, now 2 years later, it's doing really well, isn't it? You've got a few events coming up, a fish and chip supper, fundraising, bobsleighing initiative, all
yes.
sorts of things.
I noticed the bobsleighing on the website here. That's unusual. I think that's probably a first for us to say a sponsored bobsleigh. So are you going to do this yourself?
Oh, absolutely. It was one of the things on my bucket list. And that actually came from having a coffee, catching up with a friend called Lucy, and asking what she was doing. She said, oh, I do, you know, I arrange events, and one of my contracts is with the bobsleigh team. And I happened to comment and say, oh, that's one of the things I've always wanted to do. It's like one of my dream things. And she said, well, why don't you do it? And then we got chatting and thought, actually, it'd be really nice to set up an event, because part of the charity really is that we don't want to constantly ask people to have to ask people for donations, because there's a lot of that, you know, people asking, can you sponsor me, can you sponsor me? So we also wanted to look for events that people could come to, like the quiz night with the fish and chip supper. We've had a rock and roll evening, so with a band, so people, you know, pay as an entrance fee and then get something from that.
And
so,
during all of this, Julie, presumably you're meeting other people who perhaps were like-minded to you but didn't have a place to go before your charity was set up.
Absolutely. I've had quite a lot of people say, I'm really interested and I'm happy to give you donations. And we've had someone just giving where people have actually commented, a charity that I'm happy to donate to. And we clearly state what we are, you know, funding at the moment. So we've got two projects that we're wanting to fund. One we've already given some money to up in Chester, and that's a professor and his team up at Chester University looking at something called ACT. So that's acceptance, and that's not acceptance that I've got cancer, but that's acceptance that I can, you know, I've got it, but what can I do about it? So taking a really positive outcome, and they're looking to see if they can put something online that people can access and use. So we very much wanted to look not just at breast cancer, but at anybody who's diagnosed, and to help families as well, because I think that's a big part. When somebody's diagnosed, sometimes it's more the partners and the families that suffer more than the actual person going through it. So we have had some lovely comments that it's great that somebody's looking at other things. So I think, you know, when people are diagnosed, they do tend to think, oh my goodness, chemotherapy and all the side effects, etc. So I look a lot at the kind of mental side as well. And the second project is a new one, which actually isn't to do with cancer directly, but again, I think there's often things where they research one area and then find actually it helps somewhere else. And that's with a professor up at St Mary's and Barts, who's wanting to do some research looking really at nutrition into a different area, but thinks there is a knock-on effect then as to that might help with bowel cancer and bladder cancer and so on.
But so for the nutritional side of things, this is it a change of lifestyle thereby, so your diet would change forever?
Yes, it's one of the things that I don't see it when people say to me now, are you still on that funny diet, is what's referred to. And I don't see it as a funny diet. That's just what I do now. I don't, you know, I don't have dairy. I'm not.
What sort of diet is it?
Well, I avoid a lot of sugar, so I avoid a lot of processed things. We obviously eat a lot of fruit and vegetables. I don't do dairy particularly. And when I say dairy, I do goat's milk. It's a completely different sort of format to dairy. So, you know, with the goat's yogurt, goat's cheese, etc. So I've changed in that side. I do a lot of nuts and raisins, things like that. I don't do wheat.
Is it more organic?
I always was organic, uh-huh, as much as you can be nowadays, and luckily there's a lot more organic food. But yes, if I can go organic, then it's absolutely, we do, you know, organic
and
fruit
fish,
and vegetables.
Yes, I eat
fish. I do. I hold my hand up to eating meat. So, and I've also, now that I'm sort of 5-6 years on, I wouldn't say, we were just saying before that I think it is about quality of life as well. So I don't want to be that person that's very difficult. If I do go out to dinner or somebody invites us around to dinner, then that's fine. You know, if somebody's done pasta, it's not that I say that I won't eat it because it's wheat. It might be that actually I'll have a very small bit, but then I'll make sure I have a lot of salad if they've got salad with it, etc. So I work on the basis of at least if I'm sort of 80% of the diet, then that's a good place to be.
I was very interested to see in your book that there's a foreword by Eamon Holmes, and he says, being diagnosed with breast cancer did not faze her. She simply took her own advice, remained positive, ignored all negative messages, even well-meant, harnessed her techniques alongside those of mainstream medicine and achieved the right outcome. That's a fantastic accolade. So what sort of techniques worked for you then?
I did a lot of visualisation, and that comes from my NLP background when I was trained and used to work with Paul McKenna. So I know the power, and I'm very interested in the power of mind. So one thing I did, hence the book is named Beliefs Bing, and Bing refers to Bing Crosby. So for a visualization to work well, it's got to mean something to you. It's got to really go with one of your beliefs. And the film itself, White Christmas, is for us and for me personally, one of my favourite films. It has huge meaning. It was the last film I watched when my dad, when I was five, I was five, my dad died, and I remember it being one of the last Christmas films that I watched with him. And we've watched it as a family ever since. You know, it's kind of become a family tradition. Christmas Eve, we sit down and watch it. So when I was thinking about cancer, I view it as chaotic cells. And in my head, that meant all I had to do was get my chaotic cells back into order again. But I needed somebody who'd be kind as well as strong. And anybody who knows the film, in the film, Bing Crosby plays a role in the army. He's a captain in the army, and there's a general. And Danny Kaye is private. So I imagined that I had the three of them, actually, and it's in my right breast. So I imagined I had them in there, and I had these little army officers, new army people, who needed to be brought into line and get onto parade. So I imagined them, you know, in a nice way, getting them into order and practicing every night to get them in their nice, neat lines and working.
Jill, it's incredible listening to you speak, because I know we talk about visualisation quite a lot, but actually watching you visualise, and I'm with you there on this journey, and it is very powerful listening to you actually speak about visualisation, and obviously it worked for you, and it's so interesting that it can work for other people. It is an unusual thing, thinking of White Christmas the way you are, but it's so believable. Incredible.
Thank you. I mean, I used it another way. So, for example, when I went for radiotherapy, I imagined, because of the rays, obviously, people tell you, oh, you're going to feel this, you're going to feel that. I didn't actually read any of the books. So when I was given them, and the breast care nurse, and they come out with a great pile of them when you're diagnosed, and I actually said to Fia, I'm actually not reading any of those leaflets. And she looked quite shocked. And she said, but it's going to tell you everything that you need to know. And I said, no, it's called subliminal suggestions. So when you're very vulnerable, it's a suggestion that goes in that this is what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen. So I didn't read any of the leaflets, but I did say to her, if I have got any concerns, I'll get my husband to read the leaflet and then say, yes, you need to go and get this checked up. And I've got a very, quite a funny incident that happened coming out of theatre, because actually it was actually more than they thought, because they thought I was just going to have a lumpectomy and be out. And in fact, what they found when I was in theatre was it had got into my lymph nodes. So when I came out, I was well aware that under my gown, I had a drain. And I'd busily, kind of with my arm up in the air, having a good old look under my gown while I was in theatre recovery. And the nurse came rushing over, a lovely nurse called Emily, and she said, oh my goodness, you've moved your arm. And I remember kind of really rushing my arm back down and looking at her saying, oh, am I not meant to? And what was really interesting is she said, no, women who've had your operation can't move their arm for months. And I thought, how interesting is that? Yeah. Because, again, it's a suggestion that, you're not going to be able to do this. You're going to feel tired. When you go for radiotherapy, they start to say, do this, do that. Make sure you've got the shopping. And I took a very different approach in that, okay, I'll just go with how I feel.
Yes,
rather than
in the book, you say you carry on working. You
yes.
went and did your fear of flying course. And you went to the gym even.
Yes, I went to the gym three or four times a week without people knowing. My trainer knew, but I do yoga, and obviously my yoga person knew, but people in yoga didn't. So I did exactly the same. I was absolutely determined that I was going to do the best that I could and take my own personal responsibility. So as I say, with radiotherapy, going back to the visualisation, I visualised that I had my Jedi Knights. So you can hear a click with the radiotherapy. When you hear the machine click, that's when the rays are coming through. So I imagine that I had Luke Skywalker and all my Jedi Knights.
You go to the cinema a lot. I like you. You're really good fun.
So for me, they had their lightsabers, and they were batting off the bad rays and actually letting the good rays through. So again, I adapted and used visualizations all the way through. With my drain, for example, I imagined if I was wanting to turn off a leak at home, who would I call in? Well, I'd call in plumbers. So I imagined I had a whole little set of plumbers inside me busy rerouting and turning off my leak. So I managed to actually do that about 3 days in advance of when they would normally take a drain out. So I think for me personally, the mind is incredibly powerful. And I know, having spoken to some people who have gone through it, there was one gentleman I was talking to who was told, when he was having chemotherapy, people were saying, well, imagine it's poison and it's getting in there and it's killing everything. And he said, this just is really difficult. I'm finding this hard. And I said, well, if you did want to imagine something, what would work for you? And I think that's what's important about visualization. It's what works for you. And he said, I said, if you were going to imagine it, what would it be like? And he said, I'd actually imagine my chemo as being lovely clean water, and that maybe I've got a really messy river, you know, those rivers that are all churned up. Mm. And he said, and I'd imagine it as being lovely, fresh, clean water coming down from the mountain and washing that away. And I said, well, what's stopping you from doing that? And he actually then started practicing the visualization. And his brother, who I know, said, it's amazing. He's so much better. He's not struggling as much with the sickness and so on. So I don't know. And that's why when people said, but you can't say that beliefs have done it. And that's really where it then came. Well, OK, maybe we do need to fund the research and do the research into this. You know, it for me, it's my belief. So again, hence the word beliefs being in me. My belief is that it did work. But if people want proof, then we need to fund the research to do that.
It's absolutely fascinating to hear that, because you're right, everything that you read, it's what will happen, and they aren't pleasant.
Yes.
You
know, they're
so with negative. The negative side.
Yes. Absolutely, Jackie. The word negative comes out the whole
yes.
time. And if you're trying to support somebody through that journey, you try and do positive, fun things to try really hard to lift their spirits. But if you could do that from the very beginning, from the person themselves,
yes.
having control of that,
yes.
what power is that? And it, you know, you're sitting over there, you look fit and healthy and happy.
Yeah, you're marvellous.
You do, actually.
I've never been any other way.
Well, there are three Absolutely. Other people in this room, I doubt, that go to the gym four times a week.
Well, I've just done a really long walk this morning, so that was my first thing before I started work.
Oh, well, I went for a run, so.
Oh, well, you're forgiven, Jackie.
Well, I didn't. I played with
It's all about taking personal responsibility, or for me, it was about what can I do to help the medical profession. So, and a very good friend, Justin Buckthorpe, gave me a lovely quote and said, when he knew I was diagnosed, and just said, what we need to do is make all your cells sparkle. So we didn't concentrate on the cancer, we concentrated on all of me. So
fantastic. Well, I'm really sorry we've run out of time.
It's absolutely fascinating.
Absolutely. So would you like to give us your website if people want to get some more information?
Yeah, the charity website is CANFC. So CANFC. .org, the charity website, and my own website is literally my name, which is gillianharvey-bush.co.uk.
Okay, well, thanks very much for
coming on
the
show. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. So that was life coach Gillian. Gillian Harvey-Bush, and that ends the first part of our programme. And our second part of our programme, we'll be talking to Janet Shell.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Apple devices and IT systems are a crucial part of modern-day businesses. Any business can be seriously disrupted by unexpected IT failure. If you're a business owner and your company needs peace of mind Apple Mac support, please call 07907 795000 or visit www.rafalcookler.com and speak with Rafal, your local Apple certified support professional today. That's 07907 795000 for peace of mind Apple support.
In Guildford and the County of Surrey, there's a wide range of things to see, do and enjoy. If you're looking for somewhere to eat, somewhere to stay, or somewhere to take the family, or perhaps you want to visit the countryside or indulge your passion for art, culture and heritage, explore bustling towns or take in a show, find a place that's romantic and peaceful. Whatever you're looking for, you'll be spoilt for choice. You'll find so many things to do. Visit Guildford.com is the place to go to plan your days and nights out. You can also book tickets, making us your one-stop shop. So go on, log on now to visitguildford.com. Great times are just a click away.
What are you doing on Saturday morning, 10 to 1? Why not join me, Trevor Wilson, for Saturday with TW? Get involved with the Word Maze, where I jumble up a word and you've got to work out through three clues what it is. Also, fact or fiction. Again, three questions. Is it fact or is it fiction? And also, what's on my mind? Plus, some great music and chat along the way. Saturdays with TW, 10 to 1 on Brooklands Radio.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk. Or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Doreen Pipe, and Jackie Mitchell. And, of course, our honorary JW today, Dave Jamaitis, who, to be fair, Jackie, we wouldn't be doing this show if we hadn't got him on the knobs, bells and whistles.
Absolutely, Doreen. Yeah.
So thank you very much, Dave. Now, our next guest is also part of the Brooklands family. It's Janet Shell.
Hello, Janet.
Hello. Now, Janet is going to talk about something which is unique, very interesting and very personal to her. It's an exhibition that's taken place in St Paul's in May about her great uncle, who was a chorister there, and it's celebrating 100 years since his World War One death. So, Janet, absolutely fascinating. Come on, tell us a little bit about this.
Okay, well, I'll start backwards. Yes, there is an exhibition which is running until the end of June, which has the artefacts and possessions that we had from my great uncle. Now, he was my nan's brother, and when he was a youngster, he and his other two brothers were choristers at St Paul's Cathedral, and that's great for us to know that, and I'm a singer as well, so it's wonderful to have that legacy in the background. But actually what happened was his remains were found in 2009 in a farmer's field in France. So, you know, obviously this was on the front line of World War One at that time. It was actually called the Hindenburg Line, and it was a very bloody battle, as many of them were, of course, and you can just imagine. And actually when I started to delve into this, I've always been kind of rather anti-looking at anything to do with war, and suddenly I was like thrust into the middle of all this, and there were lots of things to support that, lots of plays and information on television. Anyway, I discovered that his remains had been found and identified, and that's the key thing, because it's very rare that you can identify a body from World War One. Obviously, there's not much of that left, and they had paper identification. Well, of course, 100 years on or 90-odd years on, that's going to have disintegrated. But as luck would have it, he happened to have a silver bracelet made with his name and rank on it, and that's what they discovered. And so I found out about that then on the internet. And it was a big story. It really changed my whole life. And I've always been interested in ancestry. But this is kind of like the holy grail of ancestry, if I'm honest.
Well, it sounds like it. It sounds absolutely fascinating. And, of course, the timing, the 100 years, the Great War.
Well, it is now. So what happened was that I knew he'd been this chorister at St Paul's. And when eventually I was talking to the MOD, and when we had this fantastic, because this is what the British Army do really superbly well, they honour their heroes amazingly with these full military burial, and we had that in France. Prince Michael of Kent asked if he could come, and so he was there, and there were all sorts of things, all sorts of stories around this, which I haven't probably got time to go into, but we found his sword had been sent to America, not a sword that would have been used in war, a ceremonial sword with his initials on, and I got the guy who'd collected it to come over and bring the sword, so it was on the coffin for the burial, which was extraordinary. And then the most extraordinary thing was that Mark Kane is his name, and Mark gave the sword back to the family because he said, "I can't keep this, it's yours," which was really, I mean, you know, it was very emotional at the time. And so that was presented back to the family by Prince Michael from the top of the coffin. And we sang a piece that we realised that JHP, we call him, John Harold Pritchard is his name, that we realised that JHP had actually sung to his mother just before he died. And it was a piece called Sunset and Evening Star. It was by Hubert Parry, the guy who wrote Jerusalem. And John would have sung lots of Hubert Parry whilst he was at St Paul's Cathedral with his brothers. And we sang in a quartet, my cousins and I, we sang this piece over the coffins, which was amazing.
And very, very poignant, I should imagine.
Very poignant. It was a really strong moment.
Was he the only person buried on that day? Or did they discover others as well?
There was a young private who was in his his regiment, whose battalion, who died with him. He was called Christopher Elphick, and the Elphick family had been found. So there were two named bodies, and then there were actually five other men that they just, as is usual, couldn't identify. But we happened to have this whole backstory to do with JHP, and it continued growing ever since.
And how did you feel when you found out that his remains had been found?
It was about 10 o'clock at night. I was literally looking at my... I was doing research on the family, and I thought, oh, I'll just put his name in. Normally, there is... we know there's a memorial plaque at St Paul's Cathedral with all the names of the choristers on, so we knew his name was there, but we thought, that'll be it. And up came all these conversations on a thing called the Great War Forum. I've discovered all these forums I knew nothing about. Anyway, this Great War Forum are extraordinary. They know so much and they're enthusiasts, you know, and they know, they delve and they somehow manage to get into all sorts of records that I couldn't access on the internet. So they were talking about it and I just came across the conversation. And so I looked, but honestly, I looked at it and went, hang on, that's my nan, that's my nan's family. Well, that's my uncle, hang on a minute. And I called my husband in and I said, can you just come and look at this? Because I think I might be very tired. And it was true. And then I found a number for the MOD saying, if anybody is related to this man, can you call this number or email?
That's wonderful.
So I did.
It's truly wonderful.
Incredible.
To hear. And on your site,
yes,
there's some beautiful pictures of the man himself,
yes,
as a chorister with a lovely dog.
That was the picture we had. That was the one picture that I had when I was a child growing up. My mum put a rogues gallery up on the wall of all these family relatives and she named them, thank goodness, because now I'm so into the family ancestry side that I'm able to sort of identify some people and start looking. The internet, of course, is a marvellous tool because unlike previous relatives who've had to trog round churches and go and try and find information, now you can do it at the click of a button, you know.
And
top
did you
of your
meet
digit.
Any long-lost relatives at this service that you didn't know about?
I didn't meet them at the service. So this service that happened was obviously once I said to St. Paul's, look, you know, you've got this chorister. He was a head boy of the school as well. You've got this chorister who his remains have been found. It's a big news story. I mean, I was on the television talking about it and everything, and they said we're going to wait till it's 100 years since he actually died, which was the 15th of May this year. So he died in 1917, so the day before they had this service. But what I didn't meet any relatives there, but actually on one of the famous ancestry sites, I've actually come across several other people who are like fourth cousins, fifth cousins, sixth cousins, all over the world, which
incredible.
I love. And people are always getting in touch.
And then how was the exhibition put together then?
So the exhibition then, what St. Paul said to me was, have you got, you know, we want to honour, we're going to use your relative as the lead person. So they were looking for relatives of other choristers. And I had started doing that anyway. So I'd looked for that anyway. So I already had some information for them about other people. And basically St. Paul's got in touch with them through other sources as well. But they said to me, have you got, you know, we've got a new exhibition case and we'd like to put a little exhibit. Have you got some of the artefacts? So I've got his sword and the bracelet that he was identified with as well. We were given those afterwards.
That must have been so precious for you to give.
Yes, they are still up there at St. Paul's. I did have conversations about nobody's going to sort of break open this glass case, are they? But it's actually what they've done is they've put it exactly next to the plaque, which if you look at the altar, it's down the left-hand side, if anybody's interested to go. And they've done some storyboards about him as well. So they haven't put everything that we had got, because we had books from when he was, prize books when he was at this school, with very famous names on them. Now people that in my world, in my singing world, would go, oh my gosh, you mean you've got Henry Scott Holland's name, you know, is just on there, or George Martin, who was the organist at the time.
I mean, it is truly fantastic. But it didn't stop there, did it? Because you actually went back from this amazing relative, mm-hmm, and you went back to one who was in Bath.
Oh, I did, yes. Yeah, I know. Well, so obviously I've been looking. I'm very interested in ancestry. And I think one of the things I want to say to anybody listening is that I'm just an ordinary person on the internet looking up my relatives with little bits of information that I had and photographs that have been in the family. But anybody can do it. I happened to find these amazing things. But you're right, this one actually shares my surname. So it's my four times great grandfather, Thomas Shell. And he was, as it turns out, and I didn't know this, he was a child star singer in Bath in Georgian times.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's incredible, isn't it?
I know, I've just kind of written done a photo book for myself all about it. And I contacted Bath Archives and they came up with loads of newspaper articles. And then one of the things that I do is I then go, all right, that's interesting about that. Is anybody researching this? Oh, yes, there's a man at Bath University that's doing something on Georgian musicians. I contact him. I contacted a guy in Newfoundland in Canada who had was writing a book about somebody else from that era who knew about my relative. So yes, he was a child star and then he became a countertenor, he was a double bass player, but it's the people that they get to know. He composed, it turns out, some psalms for a little chapel in Bath, and I've obviously been there and done he's going to be the next one that goes on my website.
Yes, I'm sure.
And so actually we're going to try and get those performed at some point. My husband's already done one version of the psalms, so we've heard what they sound like, and they're okay. But then I discovered that his son, who was called Christopher, my three times great-grandfather, had written a couple of songs, which are held, but these are all held by the British Library. So if you have somebody in your family that has composed music or written a book, possibly, the British Library will probably have a copy of that.
Gosh, that's amazing.
Or you can at least find out if they have done that. So that's what I did. Again, I did it online and up came the information. So we then went to the British Library. And because it's out of, from the early 1800s, you can photograph it. So we photographed the book, the music. And one of my husband's singing students sang the song recently. I'm going to sing it because I'm going to do a whole program about it, which I'm going to try and sort of take around the country. I'm going to do like
exciting.
A PowerPoint with some music and with lots of these relatives because I've got some quite interesting stuff going on.
Might you put a book together with all this?
Well, I think what I started to do, I wrote a book about my time, this is somewhere else now, in Port Sunlight, which is where I grew up, which is on the Wirral, and I discovered my four times, where I was like the fourth generation of my family there, and there were two times my great-grandfather had been a pallbearer for Lord Leverhulme's coffin, so that I've put that information on the site as well. So I wrote a book about that, and then
amazing.
I think I'm going to write about JHP, as we call him, because I think it's such an extraordinary story.
I think the interesting thing is that you have a voice, you do have a voice, and it's come all the way through those generations. And how lovely that you are going to sing about your family going back.
I know, I'm going to call it Singing Through My Ancestry or something like that, and I'm going to do it at the barn in the Riverside River.
Oh, yes, I know.
In Walton on Thames next March. I've booked a date in.
I will come back and talk about that.
I've booked a date and I'm going to so make me do it now, get it together.
Yes, and of course, you run your own voice training company as well, don't you?
I do, yes. I do everything I do is connected with voice or teaching, because I trained as a teacher and then I retrained as a classical singer, and so I stick with what I know, and I'm quite comfortable about talking to people, and so presenting, I don't just mean on the radio, I mean generally in life. So I just play to my strengths, and I think that's what we all need to learn to do, isn't it?
Yes,
you know,
yes. And you run Mama Vox.
Mama Vox, yes. Now, we rehearse at the River House on a Wednesday, and yes, Mama Vox is a group of ladies who just want, in the community, it's a community choir, and we want to sing. And actually, we've got a concert on the 30th of June in the River House barn in the evening. So
excellent.
If anybody wants to come along, try and squeeze some more people in there.
My goodness. Well, I do admire all these things you're doing. It's very exciting.
How do you
absolutely
fit it
fascinating.
All in?
I don't know. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh,
that's how I fit it all in.
Anyway, unfortunately, again, we've run out of time.
That's fine.
So would you like to give us your website for people to get more information?
Yes. If you want to find out everything and anything about me, and it'll have links to other places, it's janetshell.co.uk.
Okay, thank you very much, Janet.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you,
thank you. That was Janet Shell, and that ends the second part of our programme. In the third part of our programme, we'll be talking to Louise Simpson from the Surrey Vegan Fair.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Our relaunched shop and post office in Church Street, Weybridge, has an improved retail offer, and we provide the vital services you need from your local post office. We have 20 foreign currencies on demand and the new simple and safe travel money card that's prepaid multiple currencies on one secure card. Plus, for the last 10 years, we've been number one for travel insurance, as recognised by the UK travel industry. And for tax-free savings, we have the Premier Cash ISA. So pop in and see us at 24 to 26 Church Street, Weybridge. We are open 7 days a week, including Sundays 10 till 2. The Post Office, Weybridge. Convenience on your doorstep.
Enjoy a day out at the Kempton Steam Museum and the Hampton and Kempton Waterworks Railway. The railway operates every Sunday, and dads get a free ride on Father's Day, the 18th. Both the railway and the triple expansion steam pumping engine of the Kempton Steam Museum are open and steaming on Saturday the 17th and Sunday the 18th of June. The Steam Museum and the railway are off Snaky Lane, Hanworth. Follow the signs to the Kempton Steam Museum. And find out more at kemptonsteam.org and hamptonkemptonrailway.org.uk. The magic of steam on your doorstep. Open every Sunday, 10:30 until 4, and don't forget Saturday the 17th of June.
I know how to avoid a soggy bottom. I know the name of cinema's most famous white shark. I know all the things you can do with a Maris Piper. And I definitely know the TV show that made this music famous. But I don't know my state pension.
There's a simple way to find out when you can get your state pension and how much it'll be. Search Your State Pension and get to know yours.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello there and welcome back to Just Women with me, Jackie Mitchell and Doreen Pipe. I'd now like to welcome to the studio Louise from the Surrey Vegan Fair. Hello there, Louise.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. So it's very interesting. Currently, veganism is growing in popularity. It's a 15% year-on-year growth, according to the Vegan Society. Why do you think that is?
I think there's lots of reasons. Obviously, I think health is one of the big ones that's driving forward. I know one of your guests was talking about cancer. I'm a cancer patient myself, so I think obviously there's a lot of people that are looking at the plant-based diet for things like diabetes, cancer, heart disease. There's more and more sort of evidence coming out to support that. Equally, I think people are realising more and more where their food is coming from. So there's, you know, more footage coming out, I think, because of social media as well, of slaughterhouses and obviously the unethical way that animals are being treated. So I think there's those two. The other third thing I think that's just really important is the fact that we're overfishing the oceans and the planet is effectively in decline and it's dying. So people are really kind of concerned about the future. And I know people that have gone vegan for one of those three reasons, or some of them times three of those reasons.
Yes, and why did you go vegan and when did you?
Well, I went vegetarian when I was 22. But I was still consuming dairy. I actually went pescatarian, which is weird to go vegetarian then pescatarian, purely because my family and my boyfriend at the time were worried about my health. It turned out I actually had a rare blood disorder and it was nothing to do with diet. So I then decided to go back to vegetarian in the summer 2015. And by October, I decided that actually veganism was so accessible, whereas when I was 22, which is 21 years ago, that actually it was really hard, I thought, to be vegan. And I had this whole idea of what a vegan person was like. And people still have that idea, this sort of like tie-dye hippie that only consumes lentils and wears hemp.
So, all right, well, you don't look like that. Just draw a picture here. We're looking at a lovely blonde lady here.
It's very glamorous.
Yeah, very glam. And you don't look like my mental image of a vegan, which you've just thrown out the window.
Well, I have got my mala beads and my tie, my Indian trousers on today, but that's for other reasons, as you know.
So, how did the vegan fair start?
So basically, when I went vegan, I realised that I felt like I was the only vegan in the village or the only vegan in Surrey. So it started with me setting up a vegan group called Surrey Vegans UK on Facebook. I had to put the UK in because we had loads of people from Canada coming, and then I realised there's Surrey in Canada, so we had to kind of create the UK bit. And then from that, I was kind of getting people, you know, requesting, and we're up to, I think, nearly 450 members on that. I then realised that there's actually a North Surrey Vegan and a East Surrey Vegan group as well. They were called Vegetarian and Vegan, so I hadn't found them because of that. They've become very good friends as well. And then from that, I had a vegan meetup. There was three of us at a vegetarian vegan restaurant in Staines. Three of us turned up. It was myself, a guy called Steve Swindon, and a girl called Gemma. And Steve and myself were actually the ones that initially set up Surrey Vegan for the fairs. Unfortunately, Steve and I have decided to go our separate ways. He's concentrating more on grassroots stuff. He wants to write more. He wants to do more activism. And for me, I want to continue doing the community stuff, obviously doing more markets, doing the Surrey Vegan Fairs, and then doing a festival, which is in September, which is not a vegan festival.
Oh,
yeah,
right, okay.
It's not a vegan festival, but what we're doing is having a compassionate area within the House of Hatha, so within the health and wellness, and really focusing on the health and the planet.
So what is the date of the
That's
festival?
The 8th to the 10th of September, and it's called Always the Sun. So that's a collaboration with the Boiler Room in Guildford, so
if
still a local.
If I'm looking at this, you know, the vegan fair... I am kind of lost as to what you do at a vegan fair, to be fair. I have a vegetarian daughter-in-law, and I still find that quite hard to manage when she eats with us. That's partly down to my darling Neen not eating many vegetables. So... what do you do at a vegan fair then?
Okay, so a vegan fair is really to educate people like yourself that props don't know what people can eat and how you can veganize pretty much every dish now. I mean, I'm not a massive big fake meat eater because I haven't eaten meat since I was in my 20s. But there are people that still miss chorizo, so you can get vegan chorizo, you know. So you can make a vegan paella. You can get vegan fish now.
And vegan cheese.
And vegan cheese. And, yeah, and I mean, some people have actually said, I mean, we had Battered, which is a brilliant vegan fish and chip van at the Weybridge 10K. So we organised that with Tom from the sports shop. Well, it's actually a soya meat, but it's in a batter, but then they use like a nori seaweed. And in fact, one of my friends who's been vegetarian for 35 years said it was too fishy for her.
So, it sounds wonderful. Yeah. Where can we go and get some?
I think they're actually based in Essex, but they're all over. In fact, may be at...
They're called Batter.
Battered, but Battered. Hopefully they will be at ATS. I hope so. I've got to double check that. But
see, I think that when I think of vegetarians, I do find it difficult. I genuinely do, and I'm a good cook.
Yeah.
But I still find it quite difficult when you go to a fete or a fair or anything else like that. There isn't really anything, and if you're going to eat one of the burgers that they serve at a burger bar, well, good luck to you, my love, because it doesn't look like anything I'd want to put near my mouth.
Yes.
And so, you know, when you take that step further to being a vegan, are you just self-sufficient when you go to any fete or fair other than your own one then in Surrey?
I think it's growing. I think it is still kind of, you know, it is still in growth. There is still places you go and they don't understand. It's just like hot dogs and burgers. But, you know, for instance, if I'm up at Guy's Hospital, I go to Borough Market and they've got an amazing vegan burger bar there. And I literally, it melted in the mouth and I was literally like, wow, I need another one. And I don't normally consume gluten, but it was in such a lovely light bun that it didn't affect me. And I just literally was like, I'm going to go back up on Thursday, so I'm going to go there.
Wonderful.
And
my husband is dairy free, so we've been to Veg Fest, and in fact we've tried to go to the one in Brighton and we couldn't get in because the queues around the street were so long.
Really?
We gave up and just went to the beach, you know.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Then also the interesting thing is that you said earlier it's getting easier to be a vegan, but interestingly I have a friend who tried to go to this restaurant with a group and the chef refused to serve her because she was a vegan.
That's shocking.
And I find that
you'll have to name
remarkable.
And shame later.
Well, I'll have to, yes. So have you ever had that kind of experience?
No, never. Everybody's always been very accommodating. We even have these little cards by Viva, the charity, we leave and we say, thank you, we ate here because you serve vegan food. And I mean, look at ZZ's. I mean, their sales increased. Everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, if they want to call it that. I mean, obviously, for us, it's a growing trend, but it's not going to stop. It's because people are coming aware and awakened to the fact that they need to do something to change their habits. And, you know, ZZ have their own vegan cheese. Pizza Express have just announced actually. They're is going it, to... Pizza Express are going to do theirs.
Is there an actual symbol for it? Because obviously you see
VE,
the V.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
VE is vegan.
Yeah.
So
yeah. They do have... a lot of the time they have a whole separate menu. You might have to go in and ask for it. I want that to be more mainstream. I want you to be able to walk to a restaurant and see that Gourmet Burger Company do a vegan burger. You know, don't be out
that
and proud. Don't kind of, you know, just sort of just cater for vegetarians and omnis. You know, be... You know, but going back to what you were saying about the vegan fair, we also have like speakers. We had Peter Egan opening the vegan fair, and obviously he's a long time vegetarian, but then went vegan by doing Veganuary last year, I think it was actually 2016. So Veganuary is a charity that promote doing vegan for a month in January. So rather than doing the booze free, how about doing meat free or animal product free?
So we've got November, which is Movember.
Movember, really. Yeah. So we've got Veganuary. Some people say I don't like that name, but it works really well. And they've had year on year, I don't know the statistics, but year on year increase in people that have actually done it for that month and then also continued and never looked back. So
when you're looking at this, I mean, a lot of people will become a vegetarian, perhaps even a vegan, for health reasons. They want to feel better. Okay, they may want to say, I'm having nothing to do with animals and eating them.
Yes.
But a lot of people are saying it's health.
Yeah.
Are you seeing a massive... Yeah, how do you feel being a vegan?
Oh, a lot better. Definitely. I feel a lot better. But my conscience feels clearer as well. And, you know, I did have leather and other byproducts that I kind of justified when I was vegetarian that now I realise I can't anymore. And so, you know, I'm making steps. And, you know, it's a process. It takes time to kind of change your whole kind of lifestyle because it's not just a diet. I think that's the other thing. And at the vegan fair, we also have a lot of products. So we have a lot of vegan makeup or skincare or... you know, or vegan leather, or there's an amazing company called Watts Cork who have already said they're coming to the festival, and they have lovely, beautiful cork handbags and cork purses and things. And it's just, you know, there are other alternatives, and it's actually quite exciting to find different products. And a lot of non-vegans come to the vegan fair purely because they want to eat great food and they want to buy amazing products. So that's really the other thing we're looking at. We're not just doing vegan fairs for vegans. We want non-vegans to come and enjoy it. And
well, it certainly made me feel interested about hearing more about it, and in fact perhaps sampling it, and I would have to say I would be standing the other side of the fence before this interview, Louise. So it is absolutely fascinating that you're right, more mainstream for you. You don't want to be that menu that's a sheet of paper tucked at the back. Oh, hang on a minute, you've got a pizza that's got a bit of cheese on it.
Yeah.
Well, no, you can't have that because we haven't done that.
Yeah.
So you've got tomato on a bit of bread, really.
Yeah.
So you do, you know, we should be recognising this, and it's good that big names are doing that as well.
Yeah.
And you say you came to the markets, the Weybridge markets, when you're at the Weybridge
markets. Yeah, so we did the Weybridge market recently. The next one's the, I think it's the end of, is it the end of July or August when the Ride 100's come out?
Oh, yeah, we're actually featuring that on Just Women.
Yeah, in fact, yeah. Brooklyn's Radio, that's how I met the other Jill at the vegan fair, because we were at the Weybridge market, sorry, we were talking, we had a store with April's Table, so she does amazing cakes.
Yes, having her on later.
Yes, so she's fantastic. So that's how we started, but I would like to get more and more vegan food, but I think it takes time to try and infiltrate. But, you know, there's a lot of people that came up that are dairy intolerant or, you know, allergic or don't want to consume dairy or other products, you know, like gluten maybe. So April has an amazing range of, you know, gluten-free stuff as well. So
what you should see, Liz, is Jackie is busily writing her list here where she's going to go and a shopping.
Well, I'm plugging April now. She'll be grateful. But Aromas Cafe in Weybridge now stock April's.
Yes, that's almost under our feet, isn't it?
Oh, right.
They do great coffee and great cakes now. So.
Oh, really?
Well, and some great vegan food as well. So, yeah.
Oh, really? And where's Aromas Cafe?
Your feet.
Oh, really?
It's downstairs.
Downstairs.
Yeah.
Oh.
And what other markets then, apart from the Rides of London?
I know that April's doing Walton. Surrey Vegan. None at the moment. We're going to be doing the Weybridge ones up until Christmas. So there's four for the whole year.
Right, so okay.
I think what we're going to try and do is try and get some other vegan food rather than just cakes, because, you know, it'd be nice to have something else, like you say, an alternative to having the hot dogs or the burgers.
I think everybody lacks that. If you go to a WI market, and bless them, they can cook, they'll often do cakes. I'm not a big cake eater, but I love savoury food. Mm. So there must be lots more people like me that actually don't like sugar. Well, there's intolerant to sugar, I just don't really like it.
Yeah, there's an amazing company, actually, that's two Italians that set up, and I can never pronounce it. It's like Sagaia or something. It's an Italian word. But they basically are set up in Glasgow, and they do basically vegan meats. And their thing was that they missed having, you know, those kind of like meats, like, I don't know,
bacon.
Trying to think, like, not bacon, but the salamis, all the kind of the Italian meats, Parma ham, all that. So they've actually set up, and I actually tried some of their stuff, and it was too meaty for me. But they're amazing, and their business has just grown like 150%. So they're just, you know, they're just flying, and it just shows there is more of a need. There's a chicken shop in East London. I mean, London obviously is much better, and that's why we wanted to do Surrey Vegan, to actually try and bring some more vegan to Surrey, rather than people having to travel to London, or I'm going to Bournemouth to the Bournemouth Vegan Fair this weekend. So, you know, there's more and more popping up. It's actually getting harder to find a date that we don't clash with people as well.
Sure, but in Surrey, there aren't that many vegan cafes, or are there?
We've got the vegan cafe now in Richmond. So we've got, it's called The Retreat, which is Nick Knowles' place. So the two the people that run that were on The Retreat. I don't watch TV personally, but they were on The Retreat with Nick Knowles.
Oh, no, I did see that program, which is a fascinating.
Yeah,
yeah, that really was such a popular. Yeah,
they're doing an amazing job over there. And then the Great Bookham, there's the Crazy Bean, run by a couple, Chrissy and Rob, and that's amazing. And it's not just vegans in there, you know, that went from a greasy spoon to a vegan cafe. So people come in for a coffee and a cake or some food.
But you couldn't be more diametrically opposed, could you? If that was your final comment of this interview, I think you've summed it up in one. Louise, absolutely fascinating listening to your view of veganism, and really educational.
Thank you very much.
It certainly is. And, the stuff is going on in Weybridge. I mean, excellent that, you can pop down to Aromas as well, Jackie.
I'll have to, yes. After this, the show's over, definitely. Give it a whirl. Because I should explain, I'm also gluten-free, you see.
So. Yeah, me too.
All right, so that can be a challenge.
That can
as
be
well.
More challenging sometimes.
Mm. So is there anything you miss when you became a vegan? Is there anything that you now miss?
Do you know what? I'm thinking of a guy who contacted me, who's a comedian, Dave, and he said when he went vegetarian, he said, there's things I miss, he said, like respect. So that's all I can think of as a kind of closing line. But I don't miss anything. I really don't. There's nothing. I think the last things that I had were egg and feta, and I thought, am I going to miss that? But no. And, you know, I've got a friend who makes vegan cheese, and she makes amazing vegan feta. So, there's nothing.
Vegan feta?
Yeah, you don't need to give up anything. That's the whole thing. It's not about sacrifice. The only thing we don't sacrifice is animals. So, you know, you can have everything that you had before.
So how difficult would you say it would be to any one of our listeners who are thinking of turning vegan? How difficult would it be for them, do you think?
It's really not. And there's so much support out there, Veganuary obviously being one of them, but there's just so many things. You just go on YouTube these days, and I mean, obviously I work with a lot of YouTubers that come to our events and at speaking, and at the Always the Sun Festival we'll have a range of people from the Plant Powered PT who will talk about his health issues and how, you know, this whole myth of where do you get your protein, you know. So yeah, I mean, there's so much out there.
Okay, well, would you like to give us your website details?
Yes,
if you want more information.
Is www.surreyvegan.co.uk.
Okay, thank you very much, Louise.
Thank you.
So I'd like to thank all our guests today on Just Women. That's Gillian Harvey-Bush, Janet Shell and Louise Simpson. And we're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives. So if you know if someone you think should be on our show, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details, and we'll get in touch with them.
Well, that was absolutely brilliant show, Jackie. Thoroughly enjoyed today's. It was so diverse. So it's goodbye from me, Doreen Pipe.
And it's goodbye from me. This show will be repeated at 8 o'clock on Thursday. And join us next week for Just Women at 1 o'clock on Tuesday.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.